Welcome to Embracing the Muse. I'm your host, Sally Jean Fox, the author of Meeting the Muse After Midlife. And I'm on a quest to discover and understand how we can live our richest, most meaningful, and creative lives at any age, and especially as we age. And I'll be interviewing island creatives to discover what they can share with us about the highs and lows, ups and downs, and possibilities of living and sustaining a creative life. This is a treat today, friends. I have the opportunity to interview one of my favorite people on the island who totally represents what it is to be living a creative life, particularly a creative life after 60, which is a pet passion of mine. So I'm bringing you Sarah Van Fleet. Sarah's known to many on the island because of the amazing work that she did for the Vashon Land Trust. You were chair of the board?
I was for two years.
Yeah, with huge contribution to a major, major, wonderful organization on the island. And you've done a lot for the community, for the environment, and in the early days when I first met you, for Zumba.
The life-changing.
Life-changing Zumba.
Yeah.
Yeah, because a few months ago, I interviewed Molly Peach Matter, and she's also a Zumba teacher. And I think that there is this hidden world of really strong, intelligent women who have amazing backgrounds masquerading as Zumba teachers.
It's our excuse to unleash our inner 8-year-olds.
No, we need that. We totally need that. So
yeah.
When I was reviewing your bio, and we talked a little bit about this before the interview, I was noticing how do I even say it? It was not a flashy bio. And I know your background, and I know how amazing you are. So I'm going to tell people why I think you're amazing. And at the same time, we're going to talk a little bit about this bio thing.
Yeah.
Because you and I both came out of a world. We were both in the academic world. Mm-hmm. You have a PhD in cultural anthropology.
Correct.
And you worked for the UW. Mm-hmm. I had a PhD in leadership studies, you know. Mm-hmm. And I think we both found our way to have our degrees, but not have them have us, because there's a way that you kind of become academic and you're a little bit superior and you know, that credential means something. But inside, you know that, yeah, you can be proud of it, but it, you know, it's not who we are, you know? And so for some of us, we had to do rehab.
recovering.
Which to me was years of blogging to kind of flush out some of that old, objective, dull and dusty ways of writing. And and I don't know if Zumba was part of that for you. But in the Zumba world, you know, nobody cares that you have a PhD. You're just, you know, you can just let it go and be who you are. And so knowing you over these years, you know, you have really, you have contributed to the environmental world. You're also a musician. You play with a girl band.
I do.
And the name is?
Good Medicine.
Good Medicine. Yep. We'll talk about that. But again, you're not out in front flaunting it. It's just a piece of what you do. So tell me a little bit about that, because I think a lot of us, especially 60 plus, begin to think, who am I? Am I my resume? You know, am I my bio, or is that what I've done? That's really not who I am now. So how do you think about that?
Well, it's such an interesting question. and you asking me for a little bio, I mean, I have some stashed away from way back, and they just seem so out of date and inappropriate. It was a really great exercise to like, okay, how do I present myself now? You know, am I my degrees and my, you know, my resume? No. And in fact, I thought about it in relationship to all the people you tend to meet over time living on an island for a long time. Many people come and have all these other parts, chapters of their lives you know nothing about. And it really is this moment of like, how do you just show up in the present and meet another person with open curiosity? They aren't their past. Here they are now. I mean, of course, our past, our stories matter. They form who we are. But I like the way that you put it. It's like we are not our CVs. It's funny. I was just having a conversation with a friend, my closest friend from grad school today. And he and I were joking because when we were getting ready to go out on the job market, we used to make reference to what we called our wee-wee CVs. That we had so little really other than this PhD and some of the articles we'd written or whatever it is we did, but we were so green. And he really went on to sort of build a career in academia. He's the head of the Fulbright program now, but in Pakistan. But I have to say that for me, that period of my life, which was a huge chunk, right? So 10 years of grad school and then working at the UW, you know, directing the program for Southeast Asian Studies for another 18 years. The biggest gifts, and this I could say the same of my tenure at the Land Trust too, the biggest gifts that came out of that experience, yeah, sure, I built some skills, my knowledge base broadened and deepened. It's the relationships. It's the friendships I made during those times, that's what I will take away. That's what feeds me. That's what nourishes that part of my life. And now,
isn't that interesting? I think you're so right, because when you're in the middle of it, you know, the next move, proving yourself, accomplishing the this or that, you know, that it's kind of all consuming. But then when you look back on it, you go, well, what did I really take away?
Right.
And I, you know, I worked for Antioch University in Seattle, and it was a challenging place to work. And yet at the same time, magnificent people who I treasure.
Yeah.
And connections that I made that weave forward. So,
yeah.
And I think, at least you can tell me, but I think as we age, those connections, you just see how important they are, whether they're old ones that you've carried across time, new ones that you just begin to make. Mm-hmm. It's the tapestry that we are, you know, how we weave together with the people in our lives.
Yeah.
Even if we spend a lot of our time alone or out in the garden weeding.
Yeah. But, you know, like you and I were just chatting before we got started, and you mentioned Lynn Griner, who you interviewed. And she's a dear friend of my lead guitar player, Mary Bruno's. Mm-hmm. And so I've known Lynn a little bit, but I didn't know certain things about her until I read in The Beachcomber about all the work she's done for Mukai. Mm-hmm. And it's just, that's what I was referring to with these people with, wow, that's part of your story too. And we never know when we show up and meet somebody who they are.
Like, no, you don't.
Because you'll never get the whole story, right?
And particularly on Vashon, I have learned, and I think it's a great skill, to never think that you know who somebody is by, you know, what they look like or what they're doing.
True.
You can be like so surprised. Right. And I used to joke that, you know, don't ever say you're just a cashier at the Thriftway.
Oh,
because
never.
The cashiers at the Thriftway are amazing.
Yeah.
You know, and I think that's the way you should do life.
I think,
you know,
so
thinking
too.
That the cashier, the checker, the retail sales clerk, the person who's helping you at the doctor's office, you got to think these are big people who are doing something right now. Mm-hmm. Don't think that you know them by their role.
No. Or I think of people who, like as we age, right? And we may have physical limitations as we age,
right?
That you may look at someone who's stooped over and struggling to walk, and it's like that person may have been like a ski jumper. You know, they have a past.
Oh, they do.
And they are not that, they're not their disability. They're not their age per se. You know what I mean?
I do. And I know I wanted to thank you, for the years that you spent doing Zumba for the senior center.
Yeah.
Where you have these remarkable people, but you don't necessarily get who they were or are,
right,
just on the surface, because often there's a physical disability or a limitation or something that is the first thing you see.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
But then when you hang out long enough to begin to talk and know who they are, your jaw drops.
Someone like you says, hey, do you know what that person did back in the, you know, and I'm like, it's such an interesting, way to see people in life.
So question with that, because there are people like Richard Rohr, the Franciscan father, who wrote a fantastic book called what is it? I think it's falling upward, about the difference between the first and second half of life.
Mm.
First half of life, you build up your infrastructure, who you are, the being specialness and all of that, because it serves, you know, allows you to make a living and get your house and get your family and stuff like that. But in the second half of life, you begin to take it apart. Because in the end, who cares? You know, you're going to die.
Yeah, right.
And so, but nobody really gives us a source code for what creates meaning in the second half of life. Because in the first half, you kind of know, you can have the metrics like, you know, are you making a decent living? Did you, you know, did your career go or whatever? But the scorecard for the second half of life is not as clear. So this is Embracing the Muse, and I'm talking today with Sarah Van Fleet. What gives you meaning right now in the second half of life? Because you're in your 60s now?
Or? I'm 63. I'll be 64 in August. It's an excellent question, really. And, you know, wow, how to answer that. I think what gives me meaning is, first of all, understanding what it is to be sort of present and connected to myself, because from that place, then I have the capacity for curiosity and acceptance and compassion. All that stuff comes from that grounding in sort of, here I am right now, right here. It's very much kind of a mindfulness approach. And from that place also, meaning takes shape. And regardless of what it is I'm doing, whether I'm in the garden, whether I'm rehearsing with the band, whether I'm on the dance floor, it is that connection with self that allows me to like, oh, wow, here I am in community. How can I help this go better for myself and as well as others? You know, it's not so much coming from a like, how can I be strategic to make this go better? But instead, how can I show up and be present so that I can, whatever is needed of me in this moment, I can actually deliver that.
That is incredible and so wise, and it feels so relevant and all. And as a footnote, so difficult.
Oh, tell me about it. It's not a destination that we get to and that we stay there, right? It's this ebb and flow.
Yeah.
Noticing, oh, I'm right here. I can see you. I'm connecting with you. Oh, and there's my monkey mind taking me over here and taking me outside of this moment.
Well, so you're going to help me on this one, okay?
Oh, I'll try.
Because I know there's the managing the monkey mind, you know, the way that we always go in certain places, certain worries, certain self-judgments, you know, the whole shebang, judgments of others, monkey mind. Yeah. And then there's the outer world. And it's one thing to manage one's monkey mind, but it's another thing to realize that we're bombing Iran. And or we're destroying the environment that you've worked so hard to help restore, or that we're hurting harmless people. You know, how do you come back to that sense of presence that allows you to show up in the world when you're getting bombarded by the other? If you react to it, you know, not everybody necessarily does, but I know I do. So I'm always looking for clues.
Yeah. Well, you know, there's that old adage about reacting or responding, right? So, and again, that comes from a sense of groundedness in self that allows me, in the tenderest way possible, to make connections. So, like, we can all be so judgmental, right? And to allow myself to say, how am I complicit in these things that it's so easy for me to point my finger at others? You know, take your pick of issues, right? And the more I sort of soften around that, then the more, again, capacity I have for staying informed about what we're doing without getting overwhelmed by it, being able to connect dots and make small changes in my own life where I feel like I'm in better alignment with what my values are. And, you know, and then there's that other piece of like knowing how much information, given the way that information comes at us these days in all of its digital forms, knowing how to balance that, like where's my stress stress point
right.
where I'm getting so much that I can't stay grounded in myself, that I
right.
start getting into like the doom looping or
yeah.
whatever it is, you know, people get pulled into. I'm lucky I'm not a worrier by nature. I'm not a ruminator. I tend to be an easy sleeper, which I'm, the older I get, I'm like, thank you, universe, for letting me get 8 hours of sleep a night. I mean,
yeah,
simple pleasures, right?
Brilliant, yeah. Well, I like what you shared. I mean, the idea of softening the edges, softening mm-hmm. the judgment, that's, you know, that's a lot when mm-hmm. we can do that and come back to our own presence, our own sense of agency.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, and remind me if I'm off, that you and I have also talked about neural self-management.
Yes.
Because
yes.
when I was teaching leadership, and I did that for 20, 30 years, those words weren't even out there.
Yeah,
people
right.
talked about managing stress, but it was kind of a low-grade training.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
You know, let's talk sure. strategy. That's important. And
yeah.
stress, and that's not so important. But I would almost reverse it now
yeah.
and say learning how to self-manage on a neurological and somatic level, not mm-hmm. just on a head level, is one of those skills that is critical to us. So what do you think?
Well, I'm so in agreement. And I was lucky to find a coach who works in this modality called NARM. The acronym is NARM, and it stands for Neuroaffective Relational Model, developed by I think he was either a psychiatrist or a psychotherapist for many years. This was about 30 years ago. He felt like the missing piece in traditional therapy was the somatic piece.
Mm-hmm.
And so NARM is not a form of psychotherapy. It's sort of an addition to that that mm-hmm. many psychotherapists are incorporating. And I am not a psychotherapist. So excuse me to anyone listening who is, but it's been a game changer for me because it really is, in its simplest form, from my perspective, it's a honing of my observation of my own nervous system
mm-hmm.
and how it responds, and just getting better at, as my fabulous coach says, at we're just figuring out how this works. And she was the one who first, like, you're not trying to get anywhere. You're actually coming back to yourself, coming home to yourself, which I love that sort of image of, oh, right, I'm not getting anywhere. I'm coming back to myself so that I can build a container that's large enough to to be able to absorb the things that are coming at me from the wide world, which we know is pretty, you know, tumultuous these days. I think it's a really that self-regulation and tenderness towards self as you get better at observing, wow, in this interaction, I really wasn't fully present, you know? And instead of like, well, next time do better,
uh-huh.
it's like, well, huh, that was, you know, bringing curiosity to that and softness. Like, why was that hard, you know?
Yeah. I think that's brilliant. This is Embracing the Muse, and I'm talking today with Sarah Van Fleet. I once did an interview with a woman who wrote a book on focusing, which was a technique of developing, being able to read the felt senses in your body.
Mm-hmm.
And she would have an exercise where basically if you had a place where you could feel tension, agitation, hurt, you could put your hand on it and just say, there, honey.
Uh-huh.
You know, I can sense you're upset. You don't want to talk about it. But it was so, but in a very embracing way that allows whatever you're feeling somatically to be there without, you know, judgment, and then you can move from there. I found that super powerful. Is that related at all?
Absolutely. Yeah. I've gone back and sort of analyzed, for lack of a better term, incidents or incidents or interactions where it didn't go very well, and sort of break them apart in a curious way of like, well, you know, try to put myself back. Okay, so what was happening? And a lot of times when I have my aha moment, as I think about stuff like that, it's often that, wow, I pushed right past my red flags that were saying, I'm done here. My nervous system, my body, I have nothing left. I'm depleted. But I continue to like, well, I'm going to be the good fill in the blank, the good student, the good friend, the good, and push past areas where I should say, you know, that doesn't work for me. Or, you know, I'm really exhausted. I need to step back, whatever it is. Mm-hmm. And that's where I feel like that tenderness and that curiosity towards self and what's happening is very useful.
It's also a courageous place because you, in a sense, you have to teach your friends and colleagues that you value yourself and them enough to define these limits.
That's right.
And to pull back or to say no or not now or whatever.
Yep.
When the world is inviting you, pulling you, expecting.
Yep.
Or modeling a different kind of behavior. Mm-hmm. I think it's brave.
Yeah, sometimes it feels very brave because I'm a conflict avoider. I'd much rather just like, I'm just not going to say anything and hope it gets better by itself.
Yeah.
You know, I was the good girl. I was the cool girl. I was the one who like, oh, I'll go along to get along, you know, all that stuff. And it's nobody's fault. That's the interesting thing, including myself.
Right.
You know, this coach is often reminding me, she's like, I hear a little bit of harshness in that. Are you being hard? You know, and sometimes I don't even notice it because it's not like slamming myself, but there is a sort of a subtle criticism of like, I should have done better.
Right.
Well, no, you were right where you were.
Right.
You know, let's just learn and be curious about it.
And the nice part of this kind of softness that you're talking about is you don't end up having to blame other people.
Exactly.
Because sometimes, you know, we go past our own limits and then we blame other people.
Yep.
And I did something. I was on a call with some of my graduate school friends, nice people, but they tend to be, they get kind of heady and analytic. And and the whole conversation was getting dark and heavy, and I didn't feel any life in it. And I knew that, did I want to stay on Zoom for another hour and be sort of dragged energetically down?
Uh-huh.
Or do I want to say something nice and go weed, you know, whatever the equivalent is? And I realized that my soul, my energy field was going to be a lot better if I just said, thanks, goodbye.
Uh-huh.
And then there was no holding.
Right.
They could just, you know, keep talking their way.
Mm-hmm.
But I wasn't going to go the extra hour and then feel.
There you go.
Flattened.
That's good self-advocacy.
Well, it was very low risk.
Well, yes.
I assume you can hit leave.
Right. I love that feature. I wish that was kind of a feature in life in general.
Yeah. Okay, here's pause.
Right.
Yeah, here's rewind, you know.
But don't you, I mean, I see it in myself too. This, it's like blame, the desire, the pull towards blame. It's like a heat-seeking missile. It's free-floating. It's looking for something to attach to. Like, that's the reason that I'm upset. Mm-hmm. And it's like, oh, no.
Yeah.
We all do it.
We do it. And I've softened some as I've gotten older. I think it's one of the benefits. Mm-hmm. But I know that sometimes it's the people who we're closest to, like spouses, who often take the bullet because when something is really bugging us that we're not owning, that energy wants to go somewhere.
Right.
And you almost, like, you're sitting there going, I know I shouldn't. I know I shouldn't.
Right?
And you say this stupid thing.
Yeah. You act it out, right?
You act it out. Yeah. Or you hurt somebody.
Yep.
Not because you want to hurt them, but just because this thing comes rushing out of you because you're out of sync with.
All it is an indication. It really is feedback.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And I love that. It's like, as someone who was raised that anger is one of those emotions, no, you will never express it here in any free way. In my family of origin, I am coming to some better understandings of like anger is actually, I have a relationship with all my emotions and having a relationship with anger and actually realizing that anger can be a healthy emotion as it tells you that there's something off, that you've blown past a boundary that you have, or whatever it is. Mm-hmm. You don't have to act it out and, you know, necessarily slam somebody, but it's like, why am I feeling angry right now? You know? Mm-hmm. And that sort of self-examination is, and sort of reflection on what anger is there to tell me, just like sadness or any of the other emotions as well.
Yeah. Especially when we can also look now, anger I have trouble with because I'm not big into screaming or pounding, but but I am into Zumba.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And so crying, sadness, I can cry. I do that pretty well, but sometimes it just feels good.
Mm-hmm.
Just say, okay, I can't deal with this. I got to get on the dance floor.
Uh-huh. Yep.
Where it's a safe container.
Yes, it is.
Where I'm going to refine myself and I'm not going to hurt anybody.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah.
It's an incredible release that way.
It is really, really special here on the island.
Mm-hmm. We're very lucky.
So what does creativity later in life mean to you? I know I see it in many ways, but joining a girl band, you know, and you were in another band before that, it could be part of it, but how does creativity play out in your life?
Well,
expressing yourself.
I'm finding it's evolving in some really interesting ways. In the music realm, I'm having to wrestle with the formal training I had as a young musician and the fact that all the joy was taken out of it as soon as I was pushed to be something or have some relationship to music.
What instrument did you play?
I started with piano.
Oh, yeah.
And I went into, you know, I finally graduated to a professor at the local university who, as it turned out, was going through a really nasty divorce at the time. And I was a 13, 14-year-old. And she really took all the fun out of it for me. I mean, it wasn't all her fault. But
No, but that does happen to us.
And I gave up music for many years
yes,
as a result.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And so I'm coming back around. And, you know, Zumba is, I constantly come back to the fact that Zumba helped to bring music back. Well, it never left my body,
right.
But it helped bring me back to the importance of having an embodied sense of music and rhythm. You know, it's like our hearts are beating constantly. You know, we are rhythmic creatures.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why when I picked up the bass guitar, I was like, oh, I found my instrument. It's like the combination of melody and rhythm in such a beautiful way. And so I feel like I'm engaged in this process. And it's very hit and miss. I mean, it's a daily up and down of trying to stay true and authentic to my relationship to music and feeling that pressure of like, you should be practicing more. You should be, you know, you're up. You want to be that musician? Well, then, you know how many hours in the quote unquote shed that's going to take. And wow, that's such a voice. You can hear it.
Yeah, you can.
Tone I take, right?
Right.
Such an old system, an old paradigm that I'm trying to free myself from.
So how do you do that? Because I know my equivalent is art because I'm still stuck in piano land. You know, I look at my old music and I have all these red circles around the notes I didn't get.
Yes.
And it's almost blaring.
Yeah.
You can almost feel the flinching.
Yeah.
And when you look at the sheet music and my back will actually tighten up. Sitting upright is a little hard on it anyway, but it will tighten up when I make a wrong note.
Oh.
And I think,
oh, ouch.
Yeah, I do. I wish I had a somatic coach right at my side while I played. But in the world of art, to be able to say, how do I stay in the joy of it?
Right.
And still want to advance my craft.
Exactly.
But not from that other...
Not from that
nasty,
on high.
On high or, you know... Are you in art? It's are you selling? Are you doing this?
Oh,
are you
yes.
doing that? Are people rewarding you?
Right.
Which is, I mean, it's fair questions, but all those externals. Mm-hmm. How do you stay anchored and yet still feel like you want to be curious and expand and perform better on some level? How do you do that?
Oh, I go to Zumba classes. I really do, because that's where I get reset.
Yeah.
Like, oh, when I get lost in the, like, I'm never going to get this one, like, riff down or, you know, I'm working on something and I'm really coming up against limitations, I go and I have to say, dancing to music, connecting on that deep soul level to music and to my own relationship with music helps to reset that. And then I go back to the bass and I'm curious. I'm like, oh, I want to learn that. It comes from a different place, the curiosity and the desire to learn something new build.
Yeah, I think that's true. And I admire your ability to discern, you know, the difference, you know, and to be able to say, I'm running out of the natural life force that I usually, you know, I need to replenish, let go, and then come back and feel it in the a different way.
And I forget. I mean, my life gets busy and I don't get to a Zumba class for a while. And then I'll go back after a couple of weeks and like, oh, this is good for my soul. I need to do this.
Right,
because it's not just me getting my boogie on. It's me in a room full of others watching. I love, you know, I'm very comfortable being up close to the mirror because I can see everyone behind me. And I love watching each and every person's, you know, connecting in their different ways to what the music is telling them.
Yeah. This is Embracing the Muse. And I'm talking today with Sarah Van Fleet. I mean, I remember when I was taking your classes some years ago, and they were the Zumba Goal, which is the sort of entry-level Zumba. But I always felt, I came in and thinking, you know, this is a spiritual experience.
Church, baby.
It wasn't just church in the sense of we go on Sundays, but it was more like I open up, I connect with something, I feel my own life force.
Yes.
And then I calm down. And I'm more open.
Yes. Yeah.
You know, I think to me, that's what I call a spiritual experience.
Indeed.
You know?
Yeah. Well, and it is like a feedback loop, too. I mean, it's more than the sum of its parts, right?
Yeah.
So you have a room full of people. And I think what is powerful, one of the many things that's powerful about Zumba, at least the way it's taught on this island is, and in general, I think, is there's no right way to do this. There's taking care of your body, coming and showing up however you are, modifying if you need to. But the whole goal of it is to have fun and feel the music.
Right.
And beyond that, it's like, whoa, yeah, we're on our own that way, but we're together in sharing that experience. And it's very special.
It is. And I see at the athletic club where the classes are happening, you know, a lot of seniors come. A lot of us are over 50 and have limitations. Mm-hmm. And it's also kind of nice to be in a venue where you go, hey, we're all limited.
Yep.
Let's just make the best of what we can, not judge ourselves, not judge others, and really expand out into what we have.
Yeah.
It's not the flashy, how cute am I in my little leggings?
That ship has sailed, babe. Yeah. I love that. That's one of the things I love about getting older. Like, oh, yeah. And that's why, I mean, I don't look in mirrors. I was joking with somebody yesterday. It's like the only reason to check in the mirror is to make sure I don't have spinach in my teeth.
Which is more likely after 60.
Right, exactly. Yeah, but that sense of that you're conjuring something and you're there to sort of tap into a certain joyful moment or not. Like I see people come in and they look like they've had a hard day. Sometimes I get to check in with them, most of the time not. And it's like, however you are, you get to show up here. And we hold that.
Yeah.
You know, so, and I'd have to say it's such a lovely aspect of that world, that offering. Yeah.
Yeah, I've been doing something. I mean, it's not a big deal thing, but both in the athletic club classes and in Zumba, I love asking like one person at a time, what's your name?
Uh-huh.
Because, you know, you come in and you feel people, but you don't. And it's amazing how having that little connection, like what's your name? Mm-hmm. And I know a lot of the Zumba teachers do that, you know, strive to know people's names and stuff. But then you feel like, oh, in this crazy world, I just had this beloved moment of community.
I know. It's sweet.
Just that tiny thing.
Yes.
And that is That is so powerful.
Mm-hmm. So powerful.
So last question, because I need the answer to this one, because I want to write about it, and I don't know how. What is the power of birdsong?
Wow. I love that question. Yeah. I can't wait to see what you write about it.
It's so confusing because this week I've been like, you're more of a birder. I don't know my birds,
really.
but I go, oh, thank you, birds.
Oh, it's funny that this is your last question because the big moment for me as I made my way here today was that down by the Mike Urban's little four-way stop sign, the osprey nest up in the tower, and they're there every summer. And they were circling, and their fledgling was, you know, begging for food. And I just, it's like the return of the osprey every May, usually, and that signals summer, just like the return of the Swainson's thrushes. Birdsong. I woke up in the morning. I try to do a little gratitude thing before I even get out of bed. And the birds are so active, you know, that's the first thing that comes in an audio sense. And I had this moment of gratitude for the diversity and, oh, there's the robin. Oh, there's there's the song sparrow. And then I had a moment where I thought, you know, if birdsong disappeared, I don't know if I could go on. That's how important it is. It's such a treat. And, you know, just like with plants, too, birds are often background noise for a lot of people don't notice until they do, until they make a connection with one bird or something. And then all of a sudden, a world of birdsong opens up, you know.
I love that.
Yeah. And it's just so sweet. And, you know, little birds, like you'll walk through Island Center Forest and the Pacific wrens are the tiniest little bird in the forest with the biggest song, right? It goes on forever and ever. And I call it anthropomorphizing. I don't know, but I just feel these independent beings living their lives brings me closer to understanding that I am just one thread in this wide web of life. And they are my neighbors, just as I am theirs, you know?
It's so beautiful, Sarah. I love what you're saying. I will take this into my writing lab. Because as you were speaking, what was the movie? I think it might have been Pleasantville, where the kids were watching black and white and the whole world was in black and white until something switched. And maybe it was because there was feeling or something. I can't remember what was the switch that began to light it up in color.
Oh.
And that's when you were talking, that's what I felt like. You hone into a bird who's no longer background noise, and suddenly.
Right. Oh, that's a great image. I love that. Like the Wizard of Oz when it turns into color.
Yeah.
The birds bring it alive. That's so cool.
Yeah, so cool.
Yeah.
Well, I knew this would be like totally fun.
I know. We've just gotten started, Sally Fox. Such a treat.
Well, thank you so much, because I know sometimes there's a lot on your plate. And again, thank you for all the contributing to this community you've done. And thanks for this time. It was wonderful.
Oh, you're welcome. And thanks for being host. You're fabulous at it. Yeah.
Thanks so much for listening. I look forward to being back soon and bringing you another conversation with an island creative who can show you how it's possible to embrace your muse and live your richest and most creative life. Till then, thanks for joining us, and thanks to Voice of Vashon, 101.9 FM, for hosting this show. I'm your host, Sally Fox, and I look forward to being with you soon.